Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Screen Geeks Film Snob episode 4 now. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This week we're covering a very interesting film.
We're going to cover Terrence Malick's Badlands, essentially the natural born killers of the 70s.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very odd film. It has a classic status for a number of reasons. As I say, first of all, this is a fictionalized account of the infamous Harvey Starkweather killings that took place in the 50s, where Harvey Starkweather, a kid come from a really bad, bad side of the tracks, and took his very, very young girlfriend on a ride in a car, and it ended up being a ride that would not end for weeks and weeks, months and months, as they just casually would kill whoever would come and cross their path. It lasted for a very long time, and I believe Harvey himself died in prison, if I remember correctly, and I can't remember whatever happened to his girlfriend. But this is based on the actual Harvey Starkweather story. This is one of those stories that is absolutely just rooted in movie trivia. Harvey Starkweather, for you Joe Dante fans, is the name of the bad guy in Joe Dante's Matinee. It's like one of those names that like pops up whenever there's like a high school bully in the 50s. And incidentally, Badlands is done by Terrence Malick, one of my favorite film directors. He's only, at the time when Badlands came out, he'd only made Badlands and Days of Heaven with Richard Gere. Two beautiful movies. They're considered two of the greatest films of the 70s. Very poetic, very slow-moving, very atmospheric, very, very beautiful films. And he essentially just vanished and vanished and vanished for decades, years, and very reclusive. No one knew what happened to him. No one knew if he was alive or whatever happened to Terrence Malick. And then out of nowhere, he pops up in 1998 with the World War II film, The Thin Red Line, which would have probably have done so much better and probably would have been embraced so much more if it hadn't come out the same time as Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. And people really overlooked it. And plus, The Thin Red Line, it really isn't even a World War II movie anyway. It's a much more surrealistic, much more poetic and strange film. And I don't think Private Ryan fans are really up for something that was, so offbeat.
Gotcha.
But Malick, he's an interesting guy. He, not to get too religious here, but Malick was a member, he was a convert of the whole Jesus movement that happened in the 70s when people, were accepting Christ like crazy. And he was one of those Jesus freaks that came out of the Jesus movement in the 70s. And all of his movies touch upon his religious beliefs. His love for God and nature and life and the beauty of the earth are all over his movies. In fact, they often take precedent over narrative and plot of his films. One of the reasons people love his movies and many of the reasons that people hate his movies is that even something like The New World, rather than focusing on Pocahontas and that whole story, he really focuses on the nature and the beauty and how mankind destroys nature. I mean, it's a very, very 70s hippie sentiment, and it's all over his films, and people either really, really respond to the beauty and experience that his films are, or they think that his movies are just really, really slow slogs. But Badlands is actually one of his best films, I think.
And, it didn't completely blow me away.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is because whenever you have a movie about, people going on the run and killing people, you expect them to be really interesting, fascinating, strange characters. And that just really wasn't the case. They're just kind of normal folk, and just so happens that Martin Sheen, he looks a lot like Charlie Sheen.
Yes, he does.
Charlie Sheen looks a lot like Martin, I should say. His character was just, kind of very affable, very, live and let live, unless he felt otherwise. He's a very interesting character. He's very paradoxical, I think.
Yes, yes. Yeah, in the movie, the Starkweather and his girlfriend, the stand-ins, the fictional stand-ins, are Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek, very, very young, very, very young when they did this film.
Yes.
And it's true. Like, the way they play the characters are not only very even-keel, but very enigmatic. You never really get the sense of the psychology. I mean, she's
a 15-year-old girl,
and he obviously comes from an abusive family. But the movie doesn't really underline that. This isn't like Hannibal Rising, where you've got every nuance to why he is the way he is. They're kind of a big walking question marks, and they are so charismatic and appealing that you kind of wonder why they're doing these heinous, horrible things.
Especially when he has such a very laid back and lackadaisical just way about him.
Yes,
and during certain situations when he's interacting with people, he's a lot nicer and just kind of happy-go-lucky, whatever, than you'd think he would be in that situation.
Yes.
And I guess, I don't know, I kind of liked it more and more as it went along. I don't know if I'd say liked it, actually.
Is it a film you admire more than
yes.
like?
Yes, yes. That's definitely the way it goes.
Absolutely. So certainly you've got a movie that, you know, everything from Natural Born Killers and on has been inspired by this movie. It's certainly the Tarantino-written film, the film that Tarantino wrote but did not direct, True Romance, takes a huge, huge nod to Badlands, the biggest reason being that the score is the same. It's the exact same musical score recycled for True Romance.
And that could be a part of it, too, because you have Patricia Arquette and Christian Slater playing essentially kind of the same characters.
Yeah, but like 90s edgier versions.
But
a
bit flashier. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that maybe, you know, that very well could have influenced my opinion some too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And this is definitely a movie that film students love to talk about. And it's interesting that, you know, Malick was considered this cinematic master, even though for the longest time he only directed two movies, and this being one of them. And then he vanished. You know, it's funny too, because like Christian Bale, I remember recently reading an interview with him about his experience making The New World with Malick, and saying that Malick loves movie so much, and like it was just infectious being around him, how much he loves the cinematic process, loves it. And it's funny that this guy hasn't made more films, because like his movies or not, they are very beautiful, and the guy certainly has great, enormous talent behind the camera. And so it's strange that he hasn't done more films.
Yeah, it is. I think this is definitely a must watch for big Tarantino fans.
It's definitely like Tarantino influences are all over this movie. I mean, you know, you've definitely got the prototypical crime movie anti-heroes, and this is certainly a genre that was really big in the 70s. Like you had Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you had Bonnie and Clyde. As the culture was changing, as the counterculture was really starting to overwhelm American pop culture and American films, criminals all of a sudden were becoming the heroes of these movies. You know, it was the Easy Riders who were becoming, you know, the heroes and the cops, you know. Yeah. I mean, by the time you get to, you know, the late 70s with Smoking the Bandit, I mean, that was just the way it was. The criminals and the outlaws were the heroes, and the cops were always clearly the bad guys.
They're always corrupt, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but the criminals on the run, the cool, hip criminals, though not so much in Badlands, people like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde and Butch and Sundance, I mean, they were the heroes of the day, and certainly as the youth was rebelling against the adult authority, this was the way it was in film. You'd be hard pressed, other than maybe a Disney movie, to find a film where adult authority was actually something that was taken seriously or with respect.
The film really didn't glorify the criminal aspect of it.
Yeah,
they were who they were, and they did what they did, and sometimes they were in direct conflict with each other.
Yes.
But it didn't change the fact that it happened, which is just kind of an odd thing to come across in a movie, I think.
Yeah, it's a pretty horrific story, and the way he does it is very poetic and very non-sensationalistic. You get a sense, like, there are times where you're really seeing it through Sissy Spacek's character's eyes, and you're reacting with kind of the awe and the shock that she's going through at times.
It's kind of funny. I was telling my wife watched it with me, and it almost seems like a Waltons-type narrative at some points. It's like, yeah, it's John Voight writing it, but a lot more naive and a lot more messed up.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and you got to understand, like, the film is representing a time when the whole concept of two serial killers on the run was a shock, you know, just a jolt to society, an unthinkable thing, not to mention how young these two were. So you know, if you can only imagine, like, how, like, a Columbine story would have affected, you know, the sensibilities of people living in the 50s. And this incident was so unthinkably disgusting and nightmarish for the people who lived through it. And, and Malick, rather than making a really sensationalistic movie, you know, unlike, you know, In Cold Blood, he made a movie that it's a truly beautiful film. A beautiful film that, you know, is meant to convey like a summer of lost innocence.
The scene where they're camping out in the treehouse was, yes, really interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just kind of like, wow, you actually go out and made a treehouse where you could actually live.
Yeah,
the traps and the.
It's interesting because they really are kids. They're naive, stupid kids. And it's psychologically an interesting film, you know, because you wonder why the heck they do it.
Exactly.
You know, and it's so removed from like, you know, being a window into their mind, why they're doing this. And so you kind of just have to take it at face value. And yeah, I understand how that would be, you know, really off-putting for some.
It's just not what you expect, especially right in this day and age where everything's always spelled out in a character.
Right. Yeah, and this is, you know, it's very 70s in the sense it is very abstract at times.
Exactly. Well, let's move on to who's putting it out and all the ton of special features on it.
This is Warner Brothers,
it's
right?
It's Warner Brothers, yes. Home Video, and it's got subtitles.
Boom.
And that's it. For a $20 DVD. This is a Matchpoint situation all over again.
You know, it's it's widescreen and the transfer
and full screen.
Yeah, and full screen, and the transfer looks good, and thank you, we appreciate that. I'm sure Malick appreciates that too. But you know, for a film that is considered one of the great films of the 70s, and I agree with that sentiment, this deserved so much more. Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to talk to Warner Brothers about how good this movie is, considering the special editions that Warner Brothers has put out, like in the last few years, stuff like Once Upon a Time
In the West.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to think, like The Mission, and there's been so many two-box special editions they've done, and this definitely deserves that treatment.
Well, have you seen the other DVDs, the other Malick DVDs? Has he been involved in the special features at all?
No. In fact, like, we have so few photos of what he looks like recently. The Thin Red Line has nothing. Days of Heaven, nothing. And The New World, some stuff. It has like a lot of making of stuff, but no interviews with him, no commentary with him.
So he could just be a filmmaker who's just not interested.
He just does not want to be in the limelight. He really absolutely has refused his whole life. He's very Kubrickian in that way.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, you can pick this up at Amazon.com, Best Buy, wherever you want. But you know, I think it's worth a rental, especially if you're into the anti-hero crime films.
If you love the film as much as I do, I would wait for a special edition, Uber DVD edition, which hopefully will come in our lifetime. But you know, I wouldn't hold my breath.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's wrap this one up. But next week
we got a serial killer classic. Oh,
it's like serial killer and then serial killer.
Yeah,
in a way, we're
kind of going through the whole serial killer genre here.
I guess so. Yeah. So,
but we're going to the source. We're going to Fritz Lang's M, starring Peter Lorre. Oh,
yes,
it
has Peter Lorre. That's why I'm like, yes. I can't wait to see it.
This movie rocks.
If you want to send us feedback, you can hit us at podcast@screengeeks.com. And until next time, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Take it easy.